Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We actually see 14 states at this point where rangeland and pastures are rated at least 40%, very poor to poor.
Focusing on areas of drought, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
I'm going to focus in on the first three areas there. Starting off with the Midwest there, we actually see five states where we see at least 40% of the pastures very poor to poor. That list includes Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, and Wisconsin. Top of that list is Minnesota at 64% very poor to poor. We have that other area across the Deep South where it's been a hot, dry summer. Texas coming in number one in the nation this week at 72% very poor to poor. And the third area to focus on is the Northwest. Also been a hot, dry summer in parts of the Pacific Northwest. We do see Washington State coming in this week, 54% very poor to poor.
This is Agriculture Today.
A bill to amend the Clean Air Act to prevent the elimination of the sale of internal combustion engines.
That opened the debate on the floor of the House of Representatives on Thursday. Representative Troy Balderson's from Ohio.
We are here today because lawmakers in California want to outright ban the sale of new vehicles with an internal combustion engine. They are fed up with the pace of free market, and they want to force their consumers to switch to more expensive electric vehicles. This bill would simply prevent President Biden's EPA from granting California the waiver needed to approve this ban. If the California waiver is approved, over a dozen other states could adopt identical standards to ban the internal combustion engine. But House Republicans believe that Americans should be able to purchase the vehicle that meets their needs. The fact of the matter is consumers across America are wary of making the shift to electric vehicles. As Cox Automotive experts pointed out in July, the unsold inventory of EVs across the nation swelled nearly 350% this year. That's 92,000 EVs currently sitting unsold on dealers' lots. As shown during the Secretary of Energy's recent EV road trip, there are still major problems with owning and charging an EV in America outside the big cities. But regardless of whether you want to buy an EV or a traditional internal combustion vehicle, House Republicans believe that you should have the choice to purchase the vehicle that's best for you and your family. This bill will do just that.
August Pfluger represents the Permian Basin of Texas.
Last year, California enacted new requirements on automakers, effectively banning the sale of new gas-powered cars and light trucks by 2035 and limiting consumer choice in new vehicles to electric vehicles. We have a choice presented before us today. We can expand California's failed and expensive green energy mandates to the rest of the nation, or we can invest in liquid fuels to restore American energy independence, make gas affordable again, and secure our energy future. H.R. 1435 will accomplish these goals. You know, electric vehicles are not for everybody. Just ask Secretary Granholm about her recent road trip throughout the United States. And spoiler alert, the police were called. When you think about the costly and ineffective proposals like those from California and the Biden administration, they reject the proven benefits of liquid fuel sector. And investing in ever cleaner liquid fuels like biofuels and conventional fuels provide immediate environmental benefits, supports our domestic economy, and bolsters national security while keeping costs low. When we asked the Secretary recently about how much electricity the United States uses on an annual basis, she couldn't answer it, nor can any administration official answer it. But yet they want to mandate this, not just in California, but throughout the United States.
And a farmer and member of the House Ag Committee from Northern California, Doug LaMalfa.
Well, I hear a lot of complaining about what it's going to do to California. Well, don't cry for California. We do a lot of bad ideas that affect the whole country. Indeed, we have 1/8 of the country's population and a little over 1/8 of the country's auto sales. So what does that mean? Well, we're not going to get a whole lot of help from the manufacturers and the CEOs because they want to get along with Washington, D.C., but we're here about preserving choice for all Americans on automobiles. The California Air Resources Board is an unelected board appointed by Governor Gavin Newsom, who is not the guy that's on your side for freedom. As well, recently, after this mandate in California came out by 2035, a few days later he said, oh, people, would you please not charge your electric vehicles right now because it's going to affect our grid because we don't have enough power on the grid. Rolling blackouts, bans on hydroelectric dams. They almost took down our last nuclear power plant. So California is not the place a lot of solutions are going to come from. Indeed, you said Republicans put these in place. Well, these have been weaponized in the 50 years since then with Air Board and all the other entities that have been put in place.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Our Ag Yield Survey, this is our operator-reported survey or farmer survey. You can see we reached out to just over 7,000 producers, effectively asking them to report to us, what do you expect your yields to be for corn, soybeans, cotton, the various crops?
Lance Honig is chief of USDA's crop branch of the National Ag Statistics Service.
Or in some cases, what are your yields? Because we do have harvest underway for some crops in certain areas. And you can see we collected that information between August 30th and September 7th. In addition to that, we also have our objective yield survey for corn, cotton, and soybeans. And what that means is rather than surveying farmers, we survey fields. And so we send our trained enumerators into sample fields for these crops. You can see between the three crops combined, just shy of 4,000 of these sample plots across the major growing area. Those enumerators taking counts, measurements as the crop matures. They're harvesting portions of those plots to send off to our lab in St. Louis for further analysis there. So another measure of yield there.
Mark Jackanowski is the chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board, looks at corn projections.
Now that back year, 2022-2023, you'll see that we raised Brazil. It's easy to get a little bit confused on this because Brazil is in the southern hemisphere. So that back year production forecast represents the crop that is currently being harvested, wrapping up in Brazil. So that's based on harvest results. Brazil looking at record large production this year, now at 137 million tons. And then also Mexico, that's official Mexico data, raising their production by 1.5 million tons. Then when we look at the new crop year, that incorporates what is about to be harvested in the U.S. So we'll talk more about the U.S. balance sheet in a moment. But pretty small changes for the rest of the countries. European Union down slightly, and Ukraine up again. Similar to like I talked about in wheat, very good yields, good weather there, supporting Ukraine's production outlook. Global balance sheet. Quick talk about the back year change 2022-2023. We talked about production up. That increase in back year supply mainly reflects Brazil and Mexico. Trade up as well, higher exports out of the U.S. and Brazil. Ukraine exports, we didn't change, holding that steady at 19.5 million tons in the new crop year, I should point out. And then moving into that new crop year, production up a bit, relatively small changes here overall. Just talk about the impact on global ending stocks up a bit this month, mainly reflecting higher stocks into Brazil. In Brazil, Ukraine, United States, offset to some degree by lower ending stocks in Argentina. U.S. balance sheet, again, we're kind of wrapping up the old crop year, 2022-2023, and have some offsetting changes there based on actual data as we see it come in. Lower ethanol, lower corn use for ethanol, which was, you know, offset almost equally by higher exports. Leaving ending stocks down just marginally, 5 million bushels lower. So that moves into the carry-in, slightly lower carry-in. And as Lance discussed, in terms of total production, relatively small changes this month for U.S. production. And we didn't change any of the use categories. So that higher production, after you take into account the lower beginning stocks, just translates directly into slightly higher ending stocks. We made no change in our average price forecast either this month.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
6 weeks ago, Mr. Speaker, I stood here on the floor of the House with my colleagues as House Republicans gaveled the House out of session for a 45-day recess.
Joe Neguse is a representative from Colorado.
Now, you may recall, Mr. Speaker, the priority that House Republicans were pursuing on that day as we gaveled out of session. I can assure you it was not to fund the government. It was instead a bill targeting the lesser prairie chicken and the long-eared bat. Literally. This came on the heels of a summer spent on Republican bills to protect gas stoves. 6 weeks later, we're back in Washington. Republicans have gaveled the Congress back into session. Here we are on the House floor yet again. And what are we spending our time doing? Perhaps a bill to fund the government? No. a bill to ensure that members of our armed forces are paid, that the operations of our government remain up and running? No. Instead, House Republicans choose to spend the time of this body debating a bill attacking electric vehicles. Electric vehicles, gas stoves, the long-eared bat, and the lesser prairie chicken. Those are the priorities of the House Republican caucus. 16 days away from a government shutdown. And this is how House Republicans choose to spend our time. The priorities that House Republicans are pursuing are grossly out of step with the priorities of the American people. You are in charge, Mr. Speaker. You could choose today to put bills on the floor to build safer communities or lower costs or grow the middle class. Instead, we're left with political games. Oh, that's right, and a baseless impeachment inquiry that the Speaker announced 48 hours ago. Maybe we can get back to the basic job of the U.S. House, of governing, of passing a budget. You know, Mr. Speaker, there's a good place to start. The Fiscal Responsibility Act that this body passed a mere 4 months ago set out negotiated spending levels. I don't know if the Speaker voted for it, but 149 of your colleagues did in the Republican caucus. The ranking member, my friend from Texas, he voted for it. And now, months later, the Republican caucus, the Speaker, they have abandoned, they have revoked, reneged on that deal. Why? Because the far-right members of their caucus have demanded it. And so here we are, 16 days away from a government shutdown that many members of the Republican conference seem fixated on creating. We had a Rules Committee hearing. The distinguished gentlewoman joined me just a few days ago, where one of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle was unabashed, who said, "Let's shut it down." And of course, for those Americans watching, they know that we've been here before. They've seen this movie. They have seen how it ends. They know, Mr. Speaker, that if Republicans are in control of the House, there is one thing they can count on, and that is that Republicans will shut the government down, as they did in mid-1990s under Speaker Newt Gingrich, as they did in 2013 under Speaker Boehner, as they did in 2018 under Speaker Ryan.
While he does serve the Northern Congressional District of Colorado, farmers and ranchers in the southeastern part of the state deal with the lesser prairie chicken fallout. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Where do we go without a farm bill?
I think that's a great question, Tony. You're right. I had eight and a half years had a front row seat sitting at the negotiating table, so I have a pretty good idea of what they're going through at the moment.
Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of the Agricultural Food Policy Center at Texas A&M.
Now, as you mentioned, expiration coming up at the end of the month, and so as you can imagine, I'm getting lots of questions about farm bill expiration, but... Yeah, you know, I'll say for the most part, we really don't have to start worrying about, you know, a farm bill lapsing until the first of the year, because for the most part, farm policy in particular, and that's, you know, most of Title I, most of the things that are grower, both farmer and rancher facing, run through the calendar year or through the crop year, and so that takes us through the end of the year. And so there's really nothing catastrophic that happens on September 30th. And so if you hear that Congress is not doing an extension, in October or November, it's not due to dysfunction. It's due to the fact that it doesn't really have to be done, because nothing really bad starts happening. And even then, I think you got some time in the new year as well. So they may choose to do one this fall, but it won't surprise me if they don't, in part because they just want to keep the focus on getting a new farm bill in place. And so I think that's probably where their attention will stay.
But what about dairy and wheat growers?
I would argue that the bigger concern is that this farm bill runs through the 2023 crop year, which is this year, any crop that's harvested during the 23 calendar year. And so the bigger concern is that you've got growers having to plan, they're starting to plan this fall for the crop that they're going to plant Well, one, for wheat grower, they're putting a crop in the ground this fall to harvest next year. And for everybody else with spring planted crops, they're starting to plan this fall. And they're doing that against the backdrop of they don't know exactly what, safety net program that the Congress is going to put in place for the 2024 crop year. And so, I think it still benefits growers to have that certainty. I think what we're, the balance we're trying to strike right now, though, is that if you just did an extension of this bill to give growers certainty in 2024, the argument is that it's out of date, that it hasn't kept up with the cost of doing business. And so things like reference prices are low enough that it's not going to trigger support, and that, the time and effort would be better spent on actually making improvements and getting a good farm bill in place as opposed to just trying to scramble to get something done for 2024. And so, the real, in terms of prepping for next year, that is certainly a consequence, lack of information going into the growing season is certainly a consequence of not getting a farm bill done for the end of the year. But with that said, in farm policy, the thing we focus on is permanent law. So farm bills, they're rooted in the 1938 and the 1949 Act, and every farm bill since then really is just a temporary bill, and if it expires, you revert to those old bills. And so when you hear things about the dairy cliff, or the sky is falling, it's because we revert to permanent law, where, if you revert to a permanent, loan, for example, dairy, you've got daily harvest, so it's why you hear about dairy, the most, starting in January 1. Following that, it would be wheat growers, that are harvesting in late spring, early summer. They would have a marketing loan under, or an old support loan under wheat at parity prices. And so, I don't think we're going to have to worry about that, because I think Congress would put an extension in place before we get to that point. My point is that, that doesn't become an acute issue until next year, right? And so they've got a pretty good runway to be able to get it done.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
In addition to the survey work, we do have remotely sensed information from the satellites, particularly for corn and soybeans in the Corn Belt area.
Lance Honig is chief of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service Crops Branch on how they gather information.
You can see we utilize the time series 250-meter MODIS satellite data. We're essentially looking at NDVI data, modeling yields from that information. We utilized imagery through August 28th this month to get some measures of yield there. And then last but not least, this is the month when we also review our planted and harvested acreage for most of the crops included in the report today, including the corn, soybeans, and cotton. What that means is we were able to incorporate the FSA certified acreage information into the process, as well as all the other information we've had available at this point. And you'll see what kind of impact that had on the numbers as we move through.
Speaking of numbers, in the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, or WASD report, Mark Jekinowski, chair of the World Ag Outlook Board.
Globally, in terms of production, the U.S. changes in the U.S. dominate the global supply changes. That 200,000 ton increase for country not listed there, that country would be Ukraine. Again, good weather, good yields supporting Ukraine's soybean production outlook. Global balance sheet for soybeans. A few things to note here. Crush, we reduced 1.8 million tons. That is mainly lower crush in Argentina based on just a lower pace, and lower pace expected to continue until the new harvest begins. Now, that's offset to some degree, not completely, but offset to some degree by higher crush in China. And China has been importing, increasing their imports. So we raised China imports for the current crop year by 1 million tons, and also raised, it's not explicitly pointed out on here, but I will point it out for you, we also raised the back year China imports by 2 million tons. So they've been importing and crushing. So their crush is up, offsetting some of that Argentina decline. In terms of back year production, we also raised, balance sheet. We also raised Brazil's exports in the back year as well. What else can I tell you? Trade, for the new crop year, current balance sheet, exports down in the U.S., partially offset by, higher exports out of Brazil. Ending stocks tightening up in the U.S. and Brazil, growing in China. U.S. balance sheet, again, kind of wrapping up the old crop year, 2022, 2023, just making some final adjustments in terms of trade based on inspections data. We raised our export forecast 10 million bushels for the old crop year, which reduces ending stocks by the same amount. So we're carrying in slightly slightly tighter ending stocks than we had forecast last year. And then combined with the production change that we got from NASS this morning, which is 59 million bushels less, total supplies tightening up just 70 million bushels. U.S. crush, we reduced just slightly. Margins are still positive. Margins are still good. So crush isn't gonna crush isn't going to decline much despite the tighter supplies. Most of the reduction supplies are going to come out of exports and ending stocks, as you can see here. And with those slightly tighter ending stocks, we raised our season average market price 20 cents per bushel, now forecast at $12.90 per bushel.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Mr. Speaker, according to a Stanford University study, California is going to need to triple its electricity supply just to fuel all the additional electric vehicles on the road as a result on their the ban on gas and diesel vehicle sales. The grid expansion alone is going to cost Californians at least $75 billion in higher electric rates.
Dr. Michael Burgess is a representative from Texas on the floor of the House of Representatives Thursday.
I do want to reference a document prepared by the Committee on Energy and Commerce, who's obviously that committee was responsible for our underlying bill. Their discussion on electric vehicle mandates, on how they are unaffordable and impracticable. The majority of vehicles, 95% on the road today, run on internal combustion engines. Electric vehicles are still too expensive for many Americans. I would reference that basically these are subsidized toys for rich people. The average transaction price of an electric vehicle was $17,000 more than a gas-powered vehicle in 2022. Gas-powered vehicles continue to outperform EVs with significantly higher ranges, greater towing capacity, and they're less susceptible to issues caused by severe weather conditions. Electric vehicles lose 40% of their range in cold weather. Oh, yeah, and we're going to put all our kids on electric school buses in northern states in the wintertime and hope they get to their destination okay, because if they don't, the bus is not going to have enough power to keep the children warm until they get a rescue vehicle out there. The lack of vehicle charging infrastructure in many parts of the country, especially rural areas, makes electric vehicles impractical for many Americans. Thank you to the Secretary of Energy for so eloquently demonstrating that fact last week. Rapid EV expansion could overwhelm the electric grid and compromise grid reliability, which would result in blackouts and other issues. Look, we had a really hot summer in Texas. It made the newspapers in several locations. Good news, solar energy did supply the grid with a lot of solar power. But here's a news flash for you, and you can't make this stuff up. The sun goes down every night. So just when everyone's getting home and plugging in their electric vehicle or maybe their electric school bus, and they come in the back door and, oh my gosh, this house is hotter than Hades, crank up the AC, and guess what? The sun set, solar power's offline, the grid can't handle it, and that is a dangerous situation. And then finally, as the gentleman from Minnesota pointed out to us so eloquently, China controls the vast majority of the mining, processing, and manufacturing of critical minerals for electric vehicles, including 75% of lithium-ion batteries, as well as the processing and refining capacity for over half of the world's lithium, cobalt, and graphite. The administration unwisely prohibited mining in the Northern Range of Minnesota, so the administration was all too eager to go to the Democratic Republic of Congo and employ child slave labor in order to get those critical elements. So I do want to thank my fellow members of the Energy and Commerce Committee for bringing us this important piece of legislation. Begin to roll back some of the damage that President Biden has placed on the middle class. I don't know why this administration has declared war on the middle class, but they have, and it's been unfortunately readily apparent every day since Inauguration Day 2021. Republicans remain united in pursuing a legislative agenda that puts the welfare of the American people above the special interests of a few.
House did pass the bill, not expected to be signed into law. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It has been a year since USDA announced the project supported through its Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities Investments.
We were pleased that the 141 projects, basically all 50 states, all major commodities, specialty crops, the whole nine yards, organic, conventional ways of production. Exciting to see the diversity of American agriculture participate in this, crop production as well as livestock and all species.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack in Wisconsin Wednesday, recognizing the anniversary and highlighting some of the first-year successes associated with the program.
Around 90% of the contracts have entered into a specific signed agreement or in the process of executing the agreement, and we've now begun the exciting opportunity of reaching out to farmers, encouraging them to participate.
With the Secretary adding resources now available to encourage farmers to participate in climate-smart practices while developing markets that would pay a premium for a climate-smart commodity. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.